If you have your Bible, turn over to Proverbs. We're going to study Proverbs in our Old Testament survey. So I want to start off this one like we did a little bit with Psalms. What are some of your favorite Proverbs? What do you like? What do you go to? What do you come back to? Noelle? Yeah, when words are many, transgression or sin is not lacking, but whoever restrains his lips is prudent. It's kind of like what James talks about, the abundance of words. There's a lot of sin, right? So a lot of times it would do well for us just to not say stuff. So that's a good one. What else? Okay, yeah. Yes. With the implication being, if you don't discipline your kids, they will go the way of death, right? Not that they'll die. Yeah. A lot of times, Proverbs is talking about the paths of life that you're choosing, not necessarily direct consequences. But yeah, very good. Yeah, the man's heart directs his way, but the Lord. Yeah, directs the steps. Yeah, yeah. So there's the sovereignty of God that we have to take into account in every aspect of our life. Right. So I actually always took it like, well, you can plan the best you want, but God can always overrule and take you a different way, which is true. I actually had a friend who memorized that verse, and he quoted it to me basically affirming that we should be planning. And that God often uses our careful plans in his sovereign purposes. And so they're not at odds. And I thought that's an interesting, I mean, you can pull that out of that verse too. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's not like you want to do it your way, but God's got his way.
Yeah.
And change it even like your way. That's not, I don't read that.
Right, right, right. Anything else? There's a lot that are good. I was just talking to Warren and Cheryl about Proverbs 14:4. And it's where there are no oxen, the manger is clean, but abundant crops come by the strength of the ox. And you go, well, what does that apply to? I think it applies to having kids, actually. That where you have kids, there's just going to be messes. It's going to be dirty. Anytime you have something that's big, you're going to be responsible for it. It takes work to take care of. But that's how we actually accomplish things in life, is through these things that often are messy and difficult to deal with. There's actually a handful of different Proverbs that we've memorized together as a family. Proverbs 18:2. And this is... Specifically, these two that I'll show you are specifically in the instance of interpersonal conflict. And I think Proverbs does a great job of talking about interpersonal conflict and how to resolve it or the attitudes with which we should have. So Proverbs 18:2, a fool takes no pleasure in understanding, but only in expressing his opinion. I think that's actually really relevant and really important, is that we want to be people who are understanding. We want to collect information, not just blurt out our opinion. Ever been in an argument and the other person's talking and you're not even registering like what they're saying? Like you're just locking and loading for, you know, what you're going to say? That's what this proverb is speaking against. We need to genuinely understand. And then a little later on, Proverbs 18:17, the one who states his case first seems right, until the other comes and examines him. So this is due process, right? This is actually examining the claims of other people. I often take this to parenting, but it's easy to like just listen to the first kid that comes to you, and it's like, oh, well, they must be true. And it's like, well, they didn't tell you that the other kid hit them or provoked them or, you know, took their whatever. So we need to, as best we can, get the whole story. Any other favorites before we...
Whoever loves this
Proverbs 12:1. Yeah. Yeah. And it's funny. I remember preaching through Proverbs one time, and I had everybody in every version turn to that passage, and I just let them all say it. Like, we were all there, and every version says stupid. Like, they just all do, which is something that we'll get to in a little bit, but Proverbs doesn't mince words. It just tells it like it is, and usually in a very harsh way, a cutting way, to sort of grab our attention. So, okay, let's do some introductory stuff. What is a proverb? We've been talking about them. We've read a few. How would you define it quickly? I've got a definition there, but how would you define it? Shelley? A concise saying of wisdom. That's pretty good. That hits on a lot of it. Okay? Anything else we might add to that? That's pretty good. I would only add in there the modifier godly wisdom. So James talks about there's a worldly wisdom, and we hear worldly wisdom all the time, but just I would add in there godly wisdom. But other than that, it's basically my definition. A couple of generalities here, and then we'll read the first few verses in Proverbs. Proverbs are generalities. They're not promises, and this is where a lot of people go astray, is assuming that when they read something in the Proverbs that this is a promise by God, it will always go this way. If you do thus and such, you will always be reconciled to your enemies, you will always have long life, you will always have wealth, or whatever the case is, and they're not promises. These are generalities. They are generally true, but not always true, and we need to understand them that way. There's always exceptions to these rules. Shelley mentioned concise. They are by design pithy, so they're usually designed to just make one specific point. A lot of times we can get in trouble with Proverbs if we really try to expand what the one proverb is talking about, when it's really just kind of getting after like one specific issue. So really what we're trying to do when we look at a proverb is we are trying to understand the underlying truth behind it. The reason we like the proverb is because it helps us remember that underlying truth, but that's what we're getting after. So we're talking about giving today during the sermon. And it's basically a proverb from Deuteronomy that is, do not muzzle the ox when he treads out the grain. That's actually a proverb, how Paul understands it. It's a law, and you literally shouldn't muzzle your ox when he's, you know, going around the threshing floor. However, the principle behind that is the one who works in a particular area should get fed by that particular area. So, you know, if you're a fisherman, you should get some of the fish. If you're a farmer, you should get some of the crop and that sort of thing. So that's what we're looking for here in Proverbs, is usually the underlying principle or wisdom behind it that we can apply elsewhere. Let's just read these first seven verses in Proverbs chapter 1. He does give us a little bit of an introduction here. These are the Proverbs of Solomon, son of David, king of Israel. And why did he write it? To know wisdom and instruction, to understand words of insight, to receive instruction in wise dealing, in righteousness, justice, and equity, to give prudence to the simple, knowledge and discretion to the youth. Let the wise hear and increase in learning, and the one who understands obtain guidance. To understand a proverb and a saying, the words of the wise and their riddles. In verse 7, the fear of the Lord, the fear of Yahweh, is the beginning of knowledge. Fools despise wisdom and instruction. So, a couple of things to say about this. Proverbs is often talking about wisdom. You'll see wisdom a lot. The Hebrew word is chokmah. I'm not a Hebrew scholar, so if it's a different inflection or something, but it's chokmah. And it doesn't just talk about intellectual knowledge. It's actually talking about skill. It's often used of craftsmen who are very experienced in the trade. So it's technical skill. It's shrewdness in life. It's not just information. It's how do we actually take godly instruction and apply it to our lives specifically. Proverbs isn't concerned with you just knowing stuff. Proverbs wants you to actually live life in a skillful, godly way. So that's the wisdom that you hear about. And wisdom, and I didn't put this here, the wise is often equated to the godly. Again, not just the smart. It's often equated to the godly. And then on the contrary of that, in your notes here, the fool doesn't usually refer to somebody who is intellectually lacking. It's not, you know, the simpleton. Foolishness is really a moral category in the book of Proverbs. It's somebody who is sinful, and you'll see that throughout the Proverbs they'll often have synonyms with fool and the simpleton and the sinner and that sort of thing. It's a moral category that's being discussed, and to some extent, and you'll see this, it is somebody who refuses to learn from God. So there could be a knowledge component to it. But it's more of a heart issue of not wanting to learn from God, not wanting to walk in the ways of God, and therefore they go astray. Turn over to Proverbs 26. We could point to so many. To be honest with you, I just picked a random chapter and I started reading. I'm like, these are fun. So part of the Proverbs is that they are memorable. They're very colorful. And it's interesting. I'm really actually bad at memorizing the address of the Proverbs, but because they're so memorable, I can usually produce the actual proverb itself. So, you know, the lazy one puts his hand to the dish, but he can't even bring it back to his mouth, right? I mean, it's like you got this guy and he's got chips and he's got dip and he puts the chip in the dip and he's like, that's too much work. Like, and he won't even take a bite of the chips. Like, that's laziness. Like, we're making fun of these people. We're shaming them is really what we're doing. So Proverbs 26, just start down in verse 6. Again, we can start pretty much anywhere. Whoever sends a message by the hand of a fool cuts off his own feet and drinks violence. So if you're trying to communicate with somebody through an intermediary and that intermediary is sinful, wicked, or treacherous, like, you might as well just cut off your own feet. And you might as well just drink down violence. Because you're entrusting yourself to this fool. Verse 7, like a lame man's legs which hang useless, that's not very inclusive, is a proverb in the mouth of fools. So that's kind of crazy. Like, you can know these proverbs, you can know the wisdom of the Bible, but if you don't actually do it, you might as well be like wheelchair bound. I mean, that'd get you in trouble if you say that in public. That's what he says. Like one who binds the stone in the sling is one who gives honor to a fool. So, you know, you're like David and you're getting ready to throw, but it's bound in the sling, and so it comes back and smashes you in the head. Like, this is what happens when you give honor to sinful people, is it comes back on you. Yeah, oh my goodness. Yeah. Like a thorn that goes up into the hand of a drunkard is the proverb in the mouth of fools. So even sinful people can quote these things. Like an archer who wounds everyone is the one who hires a passing by fool or drunkard. So if you're an employer, like, you need to do some due diligence about who you're hiring, don't you? Like, you'll actually make things worse for you if you hire a fool or a drunkard. You might not even know they're a drunkard. Verse 11, of course, like a dog that returns to his vomit is a fool who repeats his folly. They just can't give it up. And it's gross and disgusting, and they know it. But man, it tastes good. Yeah. Do you see a man who is wise in his own eyes? There's more hope for a fool than for him. 13 is interesting. The sluggard says, there is a lion in the road. There's a lion in the streets. Why would the sluggard say that? He doesn't have to get up? He's making excuses. Yeah. So this is interesting. One of the signs of laziness in our lives is that we make excuses. And they sound legitimate. Like, well, I don't want... What, do you want me to die? There's lions out there. I got to stay inside. No. Verse 14, as a door turns on its hinges, so does a sluggard on his bed. Here it is, 26:15. The sluggard buries his hand in the dish, it wears him out to bring it back to his mouth. So pulling no punches on the sluggard at all. Okay. So that's what a proverb is. I think we know a lot of those. again, themes of wisdom and foolishness are big. Themes of fear of the Lord is huge. We read that back in chapter 1, verse 7. What is the fear of the Lord? It's the beginning of wisdom, or sometimes he says knowledge. And then in verse 7 of chapter 1, he says, fools despise wisdom and instruction. So, I mean, you can sort of put that axiom backwards. If you're a fool, really, who are you despising? You're despising God. You're esteeming him lightly. If these are his words, and if knowing his words is how you know him. So, yeah, the fear of the Lord, reverence, awe, respect, counting him as to be heavy and weighty in your life. And especially, you know, there are a lot of times I think, you know, we would just, you know, maybe we don't have it, or we do, or they're not around or whatever, but we just want a buddy in life, you know, to walk us through a situation or whatever. Like Proverbs is kind of like that. It's written from a king to a king to be, but it's also really written from a father to a son. It's written very parentally. And as, you know, parents know, we, you know, a lot of times we say harsh things to our kids because we actually want the best for them. We want them to hear the hard truth from somebody, and we say it in love, hoping that it will shape their future and shape their decisions. And a lot of times, like Proverbs does that. I'll just give you one practical example. When I was running for city council 4 years ago, there'd be nonsense on the Facebooks, and I'd have to be like, what do I do? Like, what do I say to this? I mean, it's just so outrageous. And it became like two things happened. Number one, I would, especially if it was outrageous, I would wait 24 hours before even thinking about responding. Like, because it's the internet, it'll be over tomorrow, like nobody will even know. That alone saved me a lot of grief. And then during that time, I was reading a proverb a day, just every single day. And so often, it was just the balm I needed for my soul and the wisdom for how to walk through those difficult situations, which are really hard. And you want to justify yourself. And it's just, you know, whoever responds to a fool gets more backlash. And I thought, you know, this is ridiculous. And so I really think this is like your friend in the Bible, or your parent in the Bible, who wants you to succeed in life, who's giving you common godly knowledge. Any other thoughts or questions before we go on a little farther? Good? Okay. Have you guys seen Proverbs misused over time? No? You've never seen them misused? No? Well, I'll tell you who misused some Proverbs. Were all three of Job's friends. You remember they quoted to him proverb after proverb after proverb over and over and over again, and their misuse was they took them as promises, or they took them as absolute fact with zero exceptions. So you remember they said, well, you know, only sinners get discipline, and clearly you're being disciplined, therefore you must be a sinner. And I forget who it was, Zophar maybe? Said, like, you deserve worse. Whatever, like, really? Like, how do... So, like, they are using Proverbs to beat on people. So we got to be careful that we're not hammering people with these. I often see Proverbs used, and I'm just going to be really honest with you. I think of other people when I'm reading the Proverbs, rather than thinking of myself. Like, well, you know, so-and-so really ought to read this one. Like, maybe I should text them or leave a copy in their Bible or something. But we really should read Proverbs self-reflectively. is this true in my life? You know, how do I be less lazy? How do I be more wise with my time or my money or my words? That sort of thing. What else? Any other ways that you've seen Proverbs misused?
Well, I've heard Zach say the fool runs when no one chases him. As an excuse for not running.
Ah, yeah, well.
Because you only run when things chase you.
Hmm. Yeah. And I think that's almost like the fool is something of a conspiracy theorist. You know, we're afraid of things that are not real. So, yep. Yeah, train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. You guys, so all you got to do is pray for your kids and bring them to church every once in a while, and they'll be like the next St. Paul, and godly and holy and that sort of thing. Well, and I think that the training up in the child in the way he should go, I think it could be taken really two ways. Number one is that I think for the most part, parents who are diligent to catechize and disciple their children, they do see the benefit of that. But I think there's also an axiom in that of, which of course has exceptions, right? People do have prodigal sons. I think part of it is just whatever you train your child in, that's the direction they're going to head. So whatever you're teaching them, like that's the way they're going to go. And I've seen, you know, Christian parents, and they will find, you know, every excuse under the sun not to come to church, and it always sounds legitimate, right? Like, well, we've got soccer. And it's like they've always got soccer. And so even... And the parent, like, wants to give their child opportunities and wants to give them, you know, relationships, that sort of thing. And maybe they have a commitment to the Lord, but what they're intrinsically teaching their child is, meh, it's really no big deal. Like, do we really need to come?
And then you should be surprised when your child grows up and says, why should I go to church?
Yeah, it wasn't a priority growing up. Yeah. So, again, these are not promises. These are not rules without exceptions. There are plenty of you know, sports ball, you know, situations where the children did grow up and love the Lord their God with all their heart, soul, mind, strength. But I think using that as a promise, and I've seen parents, like, when their child is definitely wayward, I mean, it's just no contest, and they're like, well, but they love Jesus. And it's like, but they don't love Jesus, actually. Right? Right. Yeah. 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 And
when you lay the foundation of your child's life, they may go astray.
Right.
But that foundation is always there, and God can use it in his own time, in his own life.
Yeah.
I've seen it over and over and over.
Well, you got Jacob and Esau, right? I mean, twins. And they go very different ways. And actually, God chooses the lesser, I think, the less likely one. So, yeah. Yeah, that's often how Proverbs are misused, is that they're taken as promises. You'll see prosperity preachers talk about the Proverbs, you know, where wealth is seemingly promised, or the, you know, those who are wicked, you know, they're finances get handed over to the godly, that sort of thing. And so, well, you know, this must be happening, and maybe there's some wicked way. Like you said, it's almost like self-flagellation for not being rich or whatever the case is. Okay, so I think most of you guys saw in chapter 1, verse 1, most of the Proverbs are written by Solomon. He claims authorship again in chapter 10. There are some sayings from just the wise, whoever that is, or whatever that is. It may have just been a common saying at the time. Chapter 30 is written by Agur, and chapter 31 is written by Lemuel, who may have actually been Solomon. We're not 100% sure. In biblical times, people often had multiple names, so Lemuel may have been Solomon. Proverbs talks about basically every topic under the sun. There really is almost no stone left unturned in Proverbs. There's money, sexual morality, or often immorality, laziness, quote-unquote foolish behavior. And again, Proverbs throws around the term fool a lot. And it, in our home, we often talk about, you know, somebody who's in sin being a fool as opposed to being the wise. And it's not an insult. It's a, you're going down the wrong path here. And so we don't want to do foolish behavior. And of course, our behavior comes from where? It's our heart, right? So these are surface level things. But if you have a heart that wants to please God and pursue wisdom, you're gonna live these things out. This is very practical. a lot of proverbs about treachery in general, where you gain the trust of somebody only to use it against them. You know, the proverbs against dishonest scales or you know, lying in wait for blood in the opening chapters, where you're, you know, going to wantonly entrap somebody or ensnare them. I don't think the issue is like necessarily literally like, hey, let's go dig a hole, you know, right now. I think the idea is somehow you're going to trap this person and they don't see it coming and they're trusting of you. And so it's treacherous. There's lying, there's parenting, there's marriage. Interestingly, most of the Ten Commandments are reiterated here in some proverbial form. So a lot of different topics. In fact, when I preached through Proverbs, I think it was like 10 years ago, I preached through it topically. And that's hard to like nail down, but what's that? Well, I had thought about just going verse by verse, but every sermon would have been the same. Like, because the chapters just repeat themselves over and over again. So I tried to collate them as much as possible. Okay. The outline is pretty straightforward. The first 9 chapters are like the introduction and sort of the motivation for wisdom. We'll go over at chapter 4 for a minute. So there's a lot of themes in these first 9 chapters, and especially in the earlier ones, they don't feel like Proverbs, you know what I mean? Like those are more in chapters 10 through 29, and I'm sorry I got a cough drop, my throat's tickling. The thing that I think we see over and over again in chapters 1 through 9 is that you have to go get wisdom. You have to go get it. It's not coming to you naturally. It's not your fleshly desire. You have to go get it. So just like anything else, you wanna go learn to work on your car, you got to go watch YouTube videos, and you got to read books, and you got to read the instructions for putting in your brakes or whatever it is. You want to build a house, you got to go do the same thing. You got to go do research. You got to learn. And Proverbs says godly living is no different. It doesn't just come to you naturally. You got to go pursue it. So take a look, chapter 4, verses 1 through 9. Hear, O sons, a father's instruction, and be attentive that you may gain insight. For I give you good precepts. Do not forsake my teaching. When I was a son with my father, tender, the only one in the sight of my mother, he taught me and he said to me, let your heart hold fast to my words. Keep my commandments and live. So that the idea is hold on to them. Do them. Once you know them, do them. But here it is, verse 5. Get wisdom. That's a command. Go get it. Go get insight. Do not forget and do not turn away from the words of my mouth. Do not forsake her and she will keep you. Love her and she will guard you. The beginning of wisdom is this. What is it? Go get it. That's the beginning. Like you have to go pursue. You have to go find it. So that's the beginning of wisdom. Go get wisdom, and whatever you get insight. Prize her highly, and she will exalt you. She will honor you if you embrace her. She will place on your head a graceful garland. She will bestow on you a beautiful crown. Okay, so a few just general observations here. If you want to be wise in life, you have to go pursue it. You have to dive in. It's really on you. You can ask for help. You can ask for instruction. You can ask for insight. But you have to go get it. So if you have a situation in life, in your life, where you want to grow in the Lord or you want to extinguish some sin out of your life, go attack the Bible and find it. Go attack what you need. You got a problem with your mouth, stuff that you're saying, then go memorize passages about your words and have that on your tongue and do the things it says. Do you have difficulty with finances? Then go find all the passages in the Bible about finances and go see what it says and memorize those passages. Go get that wisdom. You have to go get it. Nobody can get it for you. You have to go pursue it. And the way that you pursue it is that you prize it. You prize it. Proverbs often talks about like prizing wisdom more than gold, more than fine gold. So if you can imagine, I like going to like yard sales or whatever and finding little treasures and that sort of thing. You know, it's like, oh man, I got it. Like, this is great. I got a good deal or whatever. You have to have that attitude about wisdom and God's word. Like, do you actually prize it as much as gold and as much as fine rubies and jewels? But you have to. You have to prize it. And part of the way you do it is what's the end result? You know, the end result is at the end, she will place on your head a graceful garland and she will bestow on you a beautiful crown. Like, your life will be glorious in the sight of God if you pursue these things. But you have to prize it. One of the admonitions throughout the earlier verses is, so how do you live a wise life? You go get it. You get it by prizing it, and you also prize the outcome. But once you have it, don't let go of it. It's easy to forget these lessons that we learn. So it's not enough just to go, well, you know what? I know everything the Bible says about the tongue, so I'm good. No, don't forget that stuff. You got to constantly remind yourself of that. So understand, you have to pursue wisdom. It doesn't come naturally. It's hard work. you have to dig deep sometimes. You have to memorize. You have to journal. Whatever it is that it takes for you to find your path forward, to do it. But it is work. I think one of the shames that we is that when somebody is considering Christianity or is a new Christian, is we often don't tell them how hard the cost is to follow Jesus. Like, it's good. Like, it's awesome. And it's the best thing that you could ever do. But it's also the hardest thing that you're ever going to do. Because you have to follow the Lord. You have to crucify your own flesh. You want to live a godly life. It's difficult. Okay, so you have to pursue wisdom, and we see that. You'll often see this theme, and I mentioned before, but a theme of paths in Proverbs. So you'll have the path of the fool and the path of the wise. The path of the fool goes by the house of the pretty girl, you know, whose husband is away. And the path of the wise stays far away from that. Doesn't even go near that path. Why would they ever go near that path? You see that with money. You see that with in the beginning with the friends that you have. If you have friends that are taking you on a bad path, or after you're done hanging out with them, you're like, man, why do I do that? Then you need to not be on that path anymore. You need to choose a different path. So there's these paths, proverbial sometimes, or sometimes he just talks about paths, or the way of wisdom and the way of folly. Turn over to chapter 9. Wisdom and folly are often contrasted. In chapter 8, actually chapter 1, I think, and chapter 8, wisdom is a woman, and she's this glorious woman. In chapter 9, we see this in verse 1. Wisdom has built her house. She has hewn her seven pillars. She has slaughtered her beast. She has mixed her wine. She has also set her table. So wisdom's doing all right in life. Wisdom, the outcome of wisdom is a good home. She has sent her young women to call from the high places in the town. Whoever is simple, let him turn in here. To him who lacks sense, she says, come eat of my bread and drink of my wine. I have mixed. Leave your simple ways and live and walk in the way of insight. She's evangelizing wisdom. Like, this is Old Testament evangelism. Like, come in. Come be wise. God never rebukes people for wanting to be wise. Remember, James talks about praying earnestly for wisdom. God's not going to make fun of you for wanting wisdom, but you got to pursue it. And then you go down, verse 13. The woman folly is also loud, isn't she? She is seductive and knows nothing. She sits at the door of her house and she takes her seat on the highest places of the town, calling to those who pass by who are going straight on their way. Whoever is simple, let him turn in here. It's the same call. Come in, simple people. Both are calling to the simple people. Whoever is simple, let him turn in here. And to him who lacks sense, she says, stolen water is sweet, and bread eaten in secret is pleasant. But he does not know that the dead are there, that her guests are in the depths of Sheol. So you have to know the difference. That's why I prefaced the Proverbs with godly wisdom, right? Because there's a lot of wisdom out there, a lot of wisdom, and they sound very similar. These two women. Which one are you going to go to? Well, is the one who's proclaiming stolen water is sweet, or is the one who's saying get off your bed and go to work? Well, we kind of like intrinsically. I think we like the message. Well, we can just sit around and do nothing and get fed. Okay, so these two are often contrasted. General Proverbs, chapters 10 through 29. These are really what we're accustomed to when we think of like the Proverbs, you know, simple pithy sayings. A lot of times the first half, they're like parallelisms. You know, the first half contrasts with the second half, or they say the same thing twice, that sort of thing. Again, this language is often very sharp, not pulling any punches. I had in my notes Proverbs 12:1, which I think, Peter, was it you that read that to us? Whoever loves discipline loves knowledge, but he who hates reproof is stupid. And I think we have to ask ourselves, do we actually like being reproved? Do we like it when people come up to us and say, hey, you know, when you did this, I don't think that was right. You know, you should do it this way. Do we like that? Do we love that? Do we love it when people are a little rude when they say it to us or off-putting or maybe they don't say it perfectly? We should, you guys. We should. We should love discipline. We should love knowledge. We should love people who are courageous enough or audacious enough, however you want to say it, to come and tell us we're wrong about stuff. And even if they are wrong, it's helpful for us to do some self-reflection. Are we like this in general? Is this a thing that I need to maybe watch out in my own life? And just have the humility to reflect. Because if we don't, if we hate reproof, if we always like to be right, I mean, Solomon just pulls no punches. We're stupid. We're foolish. We're stupid. We're going to be caught up in sin. If we will never receive instruction, or if we despise receiving instruction, we do that. One of the things that I tell my kids over and over again is the reason I rebuke you is because I love you. If I didn't love you, I wouldn't rebuke you. I don't really love the little child going bonkers in Walmart. Like, I do in a generic sense, but they're not my child. Like, I have no vested interest in them. Like, the reason I sit down and talk to my kids and my family is because I love them. And sometimes they rebuke me. In terms of how the Proverbs are put together, it can feel a little random. There are themes, and it does seem like we get hints throughout the Proverbs that they are specifically put together in some way. We just don't know what that is. Some chapters seem to have themes, but that's not always clear. So like chapters 5 and 7 talk about sexual immorality. There's ones that talk about more like drinking, you know, alcohol, that sort of thing. Chapter 16 is one of my favorites. It really riffs over and over again on the sovereignty of God. Chapter 16, verse 1, the plans of the heart belong to man, but the answer is of the tongue, but the answer of the tongue is from the Lord. So this is, we would call it like a compatibilism where we have something on our heart, but what God does in us may change us. All the ways of a man are pure in his own eyes, but the Lord weighs the spirit. I mean, nobody walks around going, well, I'm wrong about this. Like, No, every view you hold is right. That's why you hold it, unless you're like a schizophrenic or something. But every view you hold is right. The question is, are you okay being weighed a little bit? Are you open to, you know, if you were wrong about something? Commit your work to the Lord, and your plans will be established. So there are times where we plan stuff out, and we plan it out godly and in humility, and God establishes those plans. Verse 4, the Lord has made everything for its purpose, even the wicked for the day of trouble. Even the wicked for the day of trouble. You got wicked people in your life? God made them. And he's using them for some purpose. We saw that again in the book of Job. Several raiding bands were used by Satan, who is used by God to destroy animals or Job's family. The Lord has made everything for its purpose. Everyone who is arrogant in heart, verse 5, is an abomination to the Lord. Be assured he will not go unpunished. By steadfast love and faithfulness, iniquity is atoned for, and by fear of the Lord, one turns away from evil. When a man's ways please the Lord, he makes even his enemies to be at peace with him. Better is a little with righteousness than great revenues with injustice, being content with your honest wages. The heart of a man plans his way, but the Lord establishes his steps. Cheryl, there you go. An oracle is on the lips of a king, and his mouth does not sin in judgment. A just balance and scales are the Lord's. All the weights in the bag are his work. It is an abomination for king or two kings to do evil, for the throne is established by righteousness. Righteous lips are the delight of a king, and he loves him who speaks what is right. A king's wrath is a messenger of death, and a wise man will appease it. In the light of a king's face, there is life, and his favor is like the clouds that bring spring rain. What are some themes that we see in there? Because they kind of come back over and over.
Well, a king in many ways should be an image and a type of God on earth, ruling justly and godly.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of proverbs here for rulers. A lot of proverbs here for rulers. Rulers of all stripes are called to obey the Lord and to rule in godly wisdom. Yep. And like you said, they are sort of like a viceroy for God himself, right? God is the one who wants this justice to be accomplished, and the human rulers are the means by which that is to happen. So, yeah. So we've got kingship, we've got sovereignty. What else? King.
God ends up judging all of it.
Yeah.
As it goes through, it's his judgment that matters.
Yeah. And we want to work. Yeah, or yourself. Yeah. And often our striving to live in a wise way is actually the sovereign means by which God brings about his. Yeah, so we see sovereignty, we see kingship, we see providence through here. You'll see other chapters seem to emphasize different themes, but just be aware of that. Any questions on some of these Proverbs.
It just seems that it does say a lot about a fool being right in his own eyes, and that's a trouble for me. I mean, I look at it, and I'm like, yeah, you always think he's
self-justification. Right. Yeah.
Well, I got the right whatever. Right time, right this, right that.
Yeah. Well, in the presence of many counselors, there is wisdom. And so a lot of times we can ask ourselves, this decision I'm about to make, do I want the godly people in my life to give me counsel about it? And if the answer is no, we might really want to think about what way we're going. If we don't want to tell people, or we don't want that input, you can almost bet it's going to be a bad thing.
Yeah, I love 1631.
Yeah? What do we got? Gray hair is a crown of glory. It is gained in a righteous life. Yep. And there's another one that talks about, you know, the glory of young men is their strength and the glory of old men is their gray hair. And the idea is wisdom, right? Hopefully as you age, you are becoming wise. Yeah. Yeah. There's an if in that verse. All right, and then the last two, anything else on those general proverbs? Go over to 26. I want to show you one little section that most people bring up in an introduction to the book of Proverbs that can be a little bit difficult for us to navigate. So verses 4 and 5, chapter 26, verses 4 and 5. And it's difficult because it looks contradictory. So verse 4, answer not a fool according to his folly, lest you be like him yourself. So just stop there for a second. What's the point?
Don't argue with fools. You just gotta go around in circles.
Yeah. Yeah, you start arguing with sinful, foolish, wicked people, you start looking as bad or worse than that sinful, foolish, wicked person. You see this all the time online. Like, why does this person respond? It's just keep scrolling. Just keep going. Okay? So, answer a fool, or answer not a fool according to his folly, lest you be like him yourself. You'll be the same fool. What about verse 5? Very next verse. Answer a fool according to his folly, lest he be wise in his own eyes. Well, do we answer him or not? What's the solution here? I think that's the point, is it depends on the situation. I think verse 4 is probably the general rule. Generally speaking, do not answer a fool according to his folly, because you're going to look stupid. However, I think there are times in which we need to give a defense to a fool for whatever reason. And it's imperative that we do, otherwise this person is seen in the right. Now, we could say that for every time a fool opens their mouth, but it's not true every time a fool opens their mouth. But there are exceptions to this rule where we might need to do some sort of a rebuke or a public correction or something like that. So that's often given as one of the more difficult types of proverbs to interpret. How do you do it when it appears that they are contradictory? They're not contradictory. Oftentimes there's a general rule and then some exceptions, and we see that throughout Proverbs.
You know, Jason, don't you think on that one, there's going to be an answer of fool on the first one, verse 4. It's like you're trying to participate in the conversation with him, and you're going to do something with it. Whereas in verse 5, you're saying you're wrong, and this is why. And you're answering the fool for what he's saying.
Yeah.
No?
I think...
Or does it look like you agree with them?
That's...
Yeah,
so, boy, you just have to be so careful. Honestly, what often comes to mind for me is politics.
That's what I'm thinking.
You know, when we have political discussions, especially with people who differ from us, a lot of times I think there is... I'm a politician. I love having political conversation. I love talking policy. I love talking first principles of where do we get our values from and how does that inform policy. I love that stuff.
Are you afraid
that Trump will invade Greenland?
Don't let him distract you.
I'm not going to answer. No. However,
he's a fool.
I don't have to get sucked into every political discussion.
That's it.
You know?
The thing is, you're talking to a fool.
Well, or in even just to be charitable, sometimes I'm just talking to somebody who has a different opinion, and that's okay.
Well, that's not a fool.
Yeah. It was really – so I love politics so much. I was watching Tucker Carlson interview Piers Morgan last night on YouTube on his channel. And it was interesting to see their back and forth on stuff. And actually, I was a little disappointed in Tucker in a couple places. And I was actually impressed by Piers Morgan holding his own, because usually I have a rather low opinion of Piers Morgan. But I thought it was actually a pretty even intellectual conversation. I thought, wow, this is pretty good. And I think Piers Morgan called Tucker out on that. And I like Tucker a lot, actually. So you go back and forth, and you could see where there were, like, questions that were trying to entrap, and they would, like, sidestep those and go around. I'm like, I think that's some wisdom there, you know, when we're sidestepping the landmine. So it just depends on the situation. Like, we don't have to get sucked into everything. Like, you know,
Well, I would consider what you were just saying right there. They're not a fool talking to a fool.
Right.
They're having a conversation.
Yeah.
A fool is different than the situation you said.
Right. And sometimes we can sidestep a thing or put down a difficulty without even addressing the merits of that actual argument and just kind of quell it. Yeah. Yeah. So, like, 8 or 9 years ago, I came across this interview podcast called The Axe Files, and it's David Axelrod, who's like Obama's chief political advisor, and he interviews all these people on both sides of the aisle, actually. And it was actually the more interesting ones to me were when he would interview a far leftist on something, because it was like they're friends, right? They're not like battling it out and it's cordial and it's nice. And it was kind of interesting to go, oh, this is how you think, you know, rather than just talking points, rather than just like trying to smash each other, that sort of thing. I don't agree with their politics at all, but it's interesting to hear why they would come to those conclusions. And they're often, quite frankly, very godless first principles that bring them to those conclusions, you know, like, oh, people are good, and so they just need a little help in government and blah. But it's helpful to hear that articulated. Anyway, I think going back to the...
If you read verses 20, thinking about verses 4 and 5, the last part, where there is no whisper, contention quiets down.
Mm-hmm.
Play that against verse 5. Answer the fool as his folly deserves. Sometimes he's so foolish that to shut up, he's going to let things calm down.
Yeah.
And not this one.
Yeah. 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 So, anyway, all that to say, politics is one, family squabbles is another, money is another. I mean, there's all kinds of stuff that we just need to be careful with, that we don't get sucked into a meaningless argument and look like the fool ourselves. Okay, chapters 30 and 31. So we've got Agur in 30. And you can tell there's like a shift in gears for how the Proverbs go. I love this prayer of verses 7 and following. It says, two things I ask of you. This is his prayer. Deny them not to me before I die. Remove far from me falsehood and lying. So that's prayer number one. Don't let me be deceptive. Prayer number two, give me neither poverty nor riches. Feed me with the food that is needful to me, lest I be full and deny you and say, who is Yahweh? Or lest I be poor and steal and profane the name of my God. I think this is like a really reasonable prayer, and I love it. Like, you know, in America, everybody's wanting to be rich. You know, everybody wants to win the lottery or, you know, buy NVIDIA when it was, you know, like 10 years ago or something like that. And it's like, yeah, but you could easily walk away from the Lord because you love riches, actually. So you have to be really careful. And then also, Lord, provide for me. Like, this is, you know, give me this day my daily bread, right? Don't let me be poor lest I be tempted to steal. It's almost like the prayer of the middle class. Like, let me be middle class. Let me just provide for me in a good way, that sort of thing. There's a couple others that I love in here. Verse 15, the leech has two daughters, give and give. Three things are never enough. Four, never say enough. Sheol, the barren womb, the land never satisfied with water, and the fire that never says enough. I mean, those are some sober truths, aren't they? I mean, it's just things that just destroy you. Sheol destroys you. Having a barren womb destroys people. A parched land and a land that's been burned. It's a German proverb?
Yeah, the eyes that mock a father and scorn to obey their mother will be picked out by ravens and eaten by vultures.
That's a German proverb?
Yeah, it's for
Germanesque. Yeah. The barbarians. Yeah. We quoted 18 and 19 a lot in college when some guy would get engaged. Three things are too wonderful for me. Four, I do not understand. The way of the eagle in the sky, the way of a serpent on a rock, the way of a ship on the high seas, and the way of a man with a virgin. They're just fun proverbs. They're good. And then chapter 31 is most famous for what?
The Godly Woman,
which is kind of an interesting bookmark. So Proverbs opens up with Lady Wisdom calling out into the street and calling people to come to her and to learn from her. And Proverbs 31 ends with a wise lady who has actually learned from Lady Wisdom, and this is the fruit of her life. Now, I know a lot of people have heard some sermons where, you know, this is almost like beaten over the head of women, like, well, if you were really godly, you'd have all of these things. There is no such thing as a woman who could possibly do all of these things. It's just not possible. I think these are different aspects of the fruit of godliness in a woman's life. And I think they really are beautiful. God has equipped women with different skills, with different abilities, different gifts, that sort of thing, put them in different situations. So not all of these are going to be the same. But I think two things. Number one, in verse one, I think this is huge. The words of King Lemuel, an oracle that his mother taught him. So the most important thing that a mom can do is to teach her sons and daughters wisdom, godly wisdom. And actually, she goes on to rebuke him. What are you doing? Why are you drinking? You're a king. You shouldn't be. Like, your mom can get in your face in a way that nobody else on the planet can get in your face. And moms should take that up. And us kids should hear that from our moms. Like, we should allow them that access. You think, you know, if this is Bathsheba, you know, or even if it's Lemuel's, whoever Lemuel is, we think it's Solomon. But, like, Bathsheba can get all up in his business because she's his mom. She has that right. She's been placed in that situation. Yeah?
I think it is just such a human thing of the kind of impact that the woman has in therapy.
Right?
Like, it's not like this impossible checklist. It's like, here's all the ways you can impact for good your people. Take up a couple and get better.
Yeah.
And then take up a couple more and get better.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's really good. No. Right. Yeah, I mean, just in our day, like, and we see it all throughout 1st and 2nd Kings. I mean, you know, if you're the ruler of the free world and you got, you know, the presidents of countries calling you, you might be too busy for them. But if your mom calls you, you're taking that call and you're listening to mom. Like, you just are. And so there is just a special place that God has designed for moms in the lives of their children. And I just want to, I know we're running out of time here, I just want to read a few of these in verse 10. An excellent wife who can find, she is far more precious than jewels. Men, our wives are exceedingly precious. The heart of her husband trusts in her, and he will have no lack of gain. She does him good and not harm in all the days of her life. She seeks wool and flax and works with willing hands. She is like the ships of the merchant. She brings her food from afar. She rises while it is yet night and provides food for her household and portions for her maidens. She considers a field and buys it with the fruit of her hands. She plants a vineyard. She dresses herself with strength and makes her arms strong. She perceives that her merchandise is profitable. Her lamp does not go out at night. She puts her hand to the distaff and opens her hands to hold the spindle. She's spinning yarn. She opens her hand to the poor and reaches out her hands to the needy. She is not afraid of snow for her household, for all her household are clothed in scarlet, magnificent robes. She makes bed coverings for herself. Her clothing is fine linen and purple. Her husband is known in the gates. She gossips in a good way about her husband in the gates when he sits among the elders of the land. She makes linen garments and sells them. She delivers sashes to the merchant. Strength and dignity are her clothing, and she laughs at the time to come. She opens her mouth with wisdom, and the teaching of kindness is on her tongue. She looks well to the ways of her household and does not eat the bread of idleness. Her children rise up and call her blessed. Her husband also, and he praises her. Many women have done excellently, but you surpass them all. Charm is deceitful and beauty is vain, but a woman who fears the Lord is to be praised. Give her of the fruit of her hands and let her work praise in her gates. Amen. Let's pray. Father, we are thankful for the wisdom that you have given us, very practical, pithy wisdom to live life for your glory. And we pray that we would follow that way. We would follow that path, that we would seek it, pursue it, treasure it, hold on to it, and pass it along to the next generation, that you would be honored. We ask in Jesus' name. Amen.